Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. This episode, we talk about the NVIDIA RTX 3090 Ti launch and discuss what is next for our retro PC channel. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKinnon.
Dennis, I noticed there's been a new video card release. And you know I get excited every time they release a video card.
Yes, you do. Super excited.
I do.
I can't get you to be quiet about them.
Well, it's because I can't tell ever if it's time. So you know I'm on my 2070 Super, which has been a fantastic card.
No, it's a super card.
It is. I see what you did there.
Yes.
But I've been looking at 30Xs, and we were mostly talking about following the same rule that we always do, and that is that...
Buy one, skip one.
Buy a generation, skip a generation. So I thought, well, maybe I could sit out the 30Xs, which is hard.
Yeah, it's difficult.
But now, Dennis, there's a 3090 Ti, which is technically the next generation, right?
No.
Well, yeah.
Kind of, but not really.
And I've been hearing rumors of 40Xs, but I want to talk a little bit about this 3090 Ti and what it does for the market, because it's supposed to be hot and new and revolutionary, and I can't avoid ads for AIO water-cooled solutions for it.
Right. Well, we have the RTX 3090 Ti. I'm going to say Ti. People want to say it's Ti. No, it's Ti. It's actually both.
Oh,
so to speak.
It's a TIE Fighter.
TIE Fighter, yes. It got released March 31st, the day before April Fool's. And I believe, what was it, April 2nd, Intel launched their Arc, which was their version of a discrete graphics card. And I don't know anything about that. So we'll just talk about the 3090 TIE.
So let's do, because this is, I think, a kind of a great example of how NVIDIA likes to release their cards in sort of a cycle. And we talked about this a little bit in the last generation.
The NVIDIA cycle has been around for years. So it used to be every 6 months they would release a new product. And by a new product, it might be just a new version of the GPU. Right here, I have the GeForce 2. 6 months later, the GeForce 2 Ultra got released. And then they had the GeForce 2 Ti and some other versions. But it was basically a six-month cadence between that. Another 6 months after that, we had the GeForce 3. And that continued on for many, many years. Now,
Is this the same as like the TikTok of the Intel processors, or are these completely different discrete designs?
It works a lot like the TikTok. So when they call it the GeForce 10 series, for instance, we have, say, the 1050, 1060, 1070s, and then shortly, and about a year later, we have the 10 series with the Ti at the end. And it's basically just kind of a rehashed version of that same silicon. For instance, with the GeForce 10 series, it was the Pascal. And then when we had the Ti released, it was still the Pascal chip. It's just that now we have a different core count, different clock speeds, and slightly upgraded version of the same card.
But the same silicon, largely.
Yes. Same silicon, same everything. I mean, a lot of times you could take the water block from one 10 series and move it to the other 10 series. It just depends on what the custom design was. A lot of them from MSI, for instance, you could take the block off of a regular card and put it on a Ti because it was exactly the same. The only difference was the GPU.
Okay. I think before we delve too deeply into that, we should talk about the specs. Let's talk about what the 3090 Ti brings to the table.
Everything.
Everything. Well, it is, in theory, the top, right? The peak.
Yeah, I have a press release or a press document from ASUS that's talking about the ROG Strix card and the ASUS TUF card. And these are the 3090 Ti editions from ASUS.
Oh, all right. Well, let's talk specs. What do we got?
Well, we have water cooling, just like what you talked about.
And it looks nice too, like they all do, RGB friendly.
So let's go over the basic specs. So we have CUDA cores. That's what we all care about.
Right.
We have 10,752 of them.
Wow. And that's impressive.
And supposedly this is the maximum amount of cores that's available in this particular GPU package.
So there isn't going to be a bigger CUDA.
There will not be a Ti Ultra 3090 with more CUDA cores.
Okay.
At this point, it's the end of the life of this particular silicon, and it will be a new generation when the next one comes out.
So now we have heard rumors of the 40X cards out in the wild, if you will, and alpha maybe testing. But that always happens.
That always happens. All right, so let's talk about the engine clocks or core clocks. So we have in gaming mode, 1950 megahertz, basically a 2 gigahertz card. And there are two versions. We have the quiet version and the OC version. The quiet version basically knocks 100 megahertz off of that.
Okay, so this isn't like the Intel processors that just came out, right? Where you have some performance CUDA cores and some lazy, you know, Minesweeper CUDA cores.
No, not so much. We have the NVIDIA Boost. So we have actually a standard clock, and I think it's at 1500 megahertz. But if the card is cool, it's going to ramp up as fast as it possibly can.
Nice.
And also consume as much power as it possibly can.
Ooh, okay. Well, maybe we should talk about that too.
A little bit later.
Okay. I'll wait.
Memory interface is exactly the same, 384-bit, and it interfaces 24 gigabits, or gigabytes in this case, of GDDR6X.
Nice.
Super fast memory.
Super fast.
Max resolution is 760.
I think that's 8K.
I think that's
7680 by 4320.
Yeah, I had a number shock there for a moment.
Can you even buy an 8K monitor, or are you still stuck playing on an 8K TV?
I'm not sure. Maybe if you have 8 monitors, but wait, this only supports 4.
Oh, so if we divide by 4, what? No, okay.
That's too much math.
Okay.
So we have NVLink, which is supported. That's kind of a thing with NVIDIA. They only support the linking of high-end GPUs, not with the low-end GPUs, unlike the way SLI was originally sold back in the day. The recommended power supply.
Ooh, there it is.
1,000 watts.
Now, does that mean that the card takes 1,000 watts, or they think the system takes 1,000 watts?
I think that is total system. So okay. That is whatever system you have plus the video card, you need to have 1,000 watts.
Ooh.
But Asus has refined that a little bit in another chart. We'll scroll up to see that in a moment.
Okay.
See, it's a PCI Express 4.0 card. I didn't realize they did 4.0, or I just haven't had my finger on the pulse. And this is the one thing that surprises me, is that the slot width, or basically the cooler on this guy, 2.6 slots, or basically it's a 3-slot cooler. Basically
3 slots. And this is not even, is this the water-cooled, or is this not water-cooled?
This is the hybrid water-cooled. So it has a fan and a heatsink, but it runs through an AIO. So it has a remote radiator with 220 millimeter fans.
Well, 2.6 is still pretty big for that. I'm a little scared for what this baby costs.
Do you really want to know?
Yeah, all right, lay it on me.
$2,199.
Oh, good Lord. Okay.
It's not cheap. It's not cheap at all.
Well, I guess let's hope that's launch price, but the way the market's been going, you probably have to pay $3,000 to get one.
Assuming you can get one, because again, this is the top version of this particular GPU. The reason that this wasn't released earlier was because probably of yield. So they have a limited number of chips, so they'll have a limited number of these cards, which is one reason why it's so much money. And we can talk about that a little bit later.
Okay.
Power supply requirements. For the 3090 Ti, it claims that if you're running an Intel i5, you can get by with a 850-watt power supply.
Oh, that's a little comforting. Okay. A lot of folks are running those Ryzen 5s in that same category.
Exactly. And then if we go Intel i7 all the way up to Intel high-end desktop, they want 1,000 to 1,200 watts.
Ooh, that's really pushing the envelope. That's an expensive power supply. We're raising the average.
But if you think about it, we have an i7 and an i9. That's already a pretty high-end machine.
Yes.
You're going to want to have that size of a power supply anyway. So regardless of what video card you install, you want to have that amount of power available.
Oh, I don't know, Dennis. I think I'd want a 1,200 watt in any build myself, if you know, assuming money's no object.
Well, and platinum. You don't want a gold or a bronze 1,200 watt. That's just wrong.
Well, you know, and if you put the price in perspective with this video card, that's not so expensive anymore.
No. Well, and if we go over to the air-cooled version of the 3090 Ti from Asus, this is the Tough Edition.
Okay.
It basically has a triple fan cooler, and the specs are exactly the same. The only difference is, obviously, we have fans, so the noise ceiling is different, and the thermal envelope is different. But everything else in terms of specs is exactly the same, all the way down to the CUDA cores and the maximum frequency.
So it's basically water-cooled hybrid versus non-water-cooled, air-cooled. Okay.
And the difference here is that the triple fan cooler is 4 slots, 3.2 slots.
Ooh, that is a big card.
That is. It's huge.
And in fact, that makes sense now that they're shipping it with a silly retention cable. It's like a bungee cord, right?
Oh, no, that's EVGA. EVGA has their For the Win 3090 ties with, what is it, the EVGA leash or the e-leash or something like that.
The leash.
And that is basically a cable that attaches to one corner of the video card itself, the one corner the furthest away from the edge of the case. It runs all the way up to a screw hole at the top of your chassis to keep the video card from flexing.
Oh, man, that's crazy. And maybe it's a return back to, desktop PCs that lay flat instead of, vertical.
Ooh, the desktop PC. Well, we also have the vertical GPU, which is very popular in a lot of cases, including the one that we built for you.
That's a good point.
But the allowance is only for, what is it, 2.5 slots? So this video card would physically not fit there. It would run into the glass.
That's crazy. How much does this thing weigh? Do we know?
I don't know, a couple pounds. I'm not sure. It actually does not list here. We only have dimensions and, of course, the bundled software.
Be afraid.
So we've roughly talked about the specs. And if you go and check a couple of the online review sites that are basically quoting NVIDIA or quoting, you know, Tech Power Up, there's basically a 5 to 10% performance gain over the 3090.
That's not a lot.
It's not a lot. And really, we're getting into this realm where we have this high-end GPU that's going to be bottlenecked by any processor that is currently available. So it's really kind of this excessive for the sake of being excessive.
Well, it is a bit of a halo product, but I imagine, you know, not just the power supply is affected by that, right? We've got a whole different build that we're looking at.
Yeah, we have power cables that are different, for instance.
Oh, and you know, I heard about that, but I didn't know if that was true. So you have to buy a whole new power supply, right, if you want to run one of these things?
Well, no, the power supply is fine. You can still run a standard power supply, but the cable or the plug that is on the GPU itself is now much smaller. So we have our standard PCI Express 4 or 6 pin, which is in the Molex style sizing.
Right.
You know, the standard one that we are all familiar with for the past forever. Well, with the 3070 and 3080 ties that I did an unboxing for in a review, the power plug is now this 10 pin, but it's a little micro. So it's really, really small.
So it's actually smaller than like the 2.8s that we've seen in previous generations?
Well, the 2.8s are actually the same size. They're just really big. Well, now they've shrunk it down, so it's a much smaller plug. And they give you an adapter to plug into your standard power supply so that you can interface with your video card.
Oh, well, that's a nice transition, I guess.
Well, it's also leading the way for future video cards that might require more power, because those pins are basically to spread the load across more wires so that we don't have an overheating problem and shorts and stuff like that. So by shrinking the power plug, we can get more power in where it needs to go and also give us more room in case we need to add a second one, which might be coming.
A second cable or a second card?
A second plug. So a different second cable. So there are rumors that the next generation NVIDIA GPU is supposed to draw 400 or 500 watts.
Wow.
Which is kind of a lot. I mean, the current 30 series is now at 300 watts at full tilt or something like that. So now we're going to have a much more power hungry GPU. It's going to require special power plugs, going to need at least a 1000 watt power supply to run these things. But of course, this is also probably at the ultra high end. So the flagship GPUs that are coming out at launch, the ones that, most of us are going to be buying will probably be in the same 300, 250 watt range that the current 30 series is at.
Well, there is good news. You won't have to pay so much to heat your house because your computer will be doing it for you.
Yeah, exactly. And that kind of brings up an interesting thing about how we build using these new graphics cards, for instance, right?
Right.
We kind of talked about this 2, 3, 4 slot cooling solutions. And we have to have that just to keep the noise down because people can't stand loud video cards anymore. So the way you fix that is to make a much larger heatsink. That much larger heatsink is still dissipating the same amount of heat. So you have 300 watts of heat coming off of your GPU if you're playing, some AAA title or even Minecraft or whatever. you have to vent that. So you need to have a case that supports that kind of venting. And that's why you are seeing a lot of AIOs on these graphics cards. So that way we can still have these silent styles that are really popular right now and be able to do our thermal dissipation at the edge of the chassis instead of trying to run air through the case. Because as we know, the silent style cases really kind of block off, you know, the main air vents that we like so much as enthusiasts.
Well, on the plus side, though, cases are moving back towards larger fans again. So we're seeing 120s and 140s and even larger in some of the new case designs, maybe in anticipation of these cards.
I think it could be really in response to certain YouTubers that really make a big deal out of absolutely nothing, just because they want more views and whatnot. Now the case manufacturers are responding, like the Torrent, for instance. I'm pointing off screen right now, but I have a Torrent from Fractal up on that top shelf over there. In a sense, that was the chassis design designed to make this one YouTuber happy. So it comes with super huge fans. There's absolutely no way that those fans are going to be blocked by structure inside the chassis. The front, it looks like it reminded me of like a 34 Dodge.
Basically,
it's huge grill and is basically wide open to allow these large fans to suck in as much air as possible. It has positive air pressure, so we don't have a lot of dust in there. And in a sense, it's the perfect air-cooled chassis. But it's completely impractical in some regards.
Well, big fans, big RGB, big views, right?
Big views.
Well, you were talking about the builds for these things. So if I want a 3090 Ti, water-cooled or otherwise, what are my options? What am I looking at out in the market here? We already talked a little bit about price, but how's availability? How's the system building looking?
In terms of availability, we went out to EVGA.com. They sell, they have the For the Win card and then the Kingpin edition card. Obviously, you got a flagship, you're going to have the Kingpin's name on it.
Oh, yeah.
All of the massive overclocking that that card brings. Unfortunately, you can't buy any one of those cards. They're on their queue system.
Oh, is that like the lottery, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a lottery. You just, you know, you wait in line. And then they send you an email and you have, a half a day to come in and make your purchase. Otherwise, it goes to the next person in line. So it gives you a chance to actually buy the card. But I've heard stories about people that have been in a queue for over a year.
They're
trying to get one particular card that is in high demand, but EVJ stopped making it. They just haven't taken them out of queue.
No, so you just sit there forever.
Yep, trying to buy a card because you want it for mining or something silly like that. You know, you got to move into something more modern. Well, we looked around at some of the boutique builders. So what is it? We went out to CyberPower PC.
Right.
We were looking around at their computer builds, and they had, the 3060s, the 3070 Ti's, 3080 Ti's.
But no 3090s.
No 3090s or 3090 Ti's.
That's true.
And then we went a Google search.
Yeah, we finally gave up and searched Google. Who has these cards, right?
Right. And what was it? Main Gear came up. Well, Main Gear basically had a page dedicated to the 3090 Ti, which was a recant of everything NVIDIA said. So they're just advertising.
It's pretty.
This graphics card.
It's just a press release, really.
Yeah. And saying that, hey, well, with these builds, you can get this card. Well, we go and say, well, let's configure one, right? We get to that page, and the 3090 Ti is not available as an option to add to those builds. Well, those builds also are fully water-cooled. And I know from experience that the 3090 Ti doesn't have a DIY water block yet because the design of the card is different from the 3090. So you can't just migrate the water block from one to the other. We need a custom block for it. And with it being a limited edition card, it's very unlikely that anybody's going to build one.
Or if they do, in very limited amounts.
Right. And then we have the absorbently high cost of that particular card at $2,200, at least for the ASUS edition. And it comes with its own water cooler. Main Gear is probably not going to install that particular card just because of that. It will break the immersion and the design that they had in place for that particular build.
Sure.
So really, these cards are going to be probably limited by design, and it will be fully retail. So it will be us waiting in line trying to buy one of these to put in our custom build with the stipulation that if we have a full water loop, like what I have in my build, I'm going to have to rebuild it to swap out the video card so that I could have this all-in-one water cooling with my full loop on my CPU. In your particular case, you have the loop that's over the VRM and this and the processor, but the video card is air-cooled, so it would be a pretty easy fit for you.
Yeah, but we were in the same boat where we couldn't find a good water block at the time, and it sounds like you could be in the same boat with this.
Exactly. So ultimately, I get the feeling that this is more of a, not necessarily a vapor launch, but this is the type of launch of a product that is designed to make headlines, get people talking about them, kind of like us, but is also a product that is likely not going to be purchased except for the elite enthusiasts that really have more money than brains.
Well, the good news is it sounds like the rest of us can wait for the 4X cards, and hopefully they will bring even more power. Dennis, we talked quite a bit about your retro adventures through Hackfort. I know you'd built a couple of machines specifically for that project.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also for the YouTube channel.
And, of course, the YouTube channel, which we'll link to below.
Yep.
But I know those are pretty much done builds, but I know you're not finished, so I thought we should maybe take a look at what the next retro PC project is.
Well, okay. So on the bench, which is behind me, I'm going to go point again, radio.
Radio.
I have another mini tower chassis that has a 4625 megahertz in it.
Ooh, so newer.
Yeah, it's a little bit newer. Well, newer than my 386, so to speak. And it's going to be a teardown, cleanup, refurb style build. So I'm going to tear out all the gunk and whatnot. And I think what's going to go in there is a Socket 7 K6 era machine. But then I'm going to take the motherboard out and I want to do a, I don't know, kind of like a benchmark through the ages sort of article. Some of it's going to be on hardwareasylum.com, but then it will be part of the YouTube channel as well, where I'm showing how I'm going to be benchmarking these different motherboards. So my 386 40 megahertz will get benchmarked in a certain way. I have the 486SX, which is in that machine, so the board will come out, I'll test it. My 386, I have a 486 DLC processor for it, which is, in a sense, it's a special Cirix chip that was a 386 package, but had the 486 instruction set.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've ever had one of those.
Well, neither have I, actually. But it turns out, as you know, some of these retro machines, they tell a special story in what was available to do on these motherboards. And that was primarily because these machines were really expensive, which is something we talked about in a previous podcast episode. Right. I can link it down below if you'd like to know. But back then, 386s might be, you know, $15,000, depending on the configuration and when you bought it and stuff like that. So as you were building a machine, you needed to have an upgrade path. And this is kind of where our upgrade mentality started. So you could buy a motherboard and you buy it with the option to upgrade the processor at some point. So you could put a faster processor into it if you felt the need, or put in a math coprocessor. Well, my 386 has a socket for the DLC processor, which allows it to run 486 extensions. It's not as fast as a real 486, but that's just something I've read. I've not actually tested it. So that's really what I want to do, is explore the different versions of 386, 486, and just kind of explore the different performance aspects of those machines.
Okay, so let's talk about what other hardware is going to be in those. I see some video cards on the bench.
Oh, yeah. And so these video cards are actually for a slightly different project. And this is a story I've told several times on the podcast, mostly because it is probably a defining experience that really got me into wanting to know more about computer hardware review, because I felt that I was an enthusiast back then. So I bought a GeForce 2 Ultra. And
okay,
the card that I have here is actually the card. It's not my card, but it's actually the card that I had.
Taking a look at this here.
Yep. Which is a Hercules Prophet 2 Ultra with GeForce 2 Ultra, basically. It's pretty darn cool. It's got a little fan over the GeForce 2 GPU.
Yeah, pretty heat sinks too.
Little blue heat sinks. And the Hercules brand was well known because they offered overclocked or hot clocked cards at the time. Faster timings on the memory and stuff like that. Well, the GeForce 2 Ultra was the last generation of the GeForce 2. It was the full realization of what the GeForce could do.
Okay.
Well, if you haven't heard the story, I'll just quickly recap it.
Give us the high level.
So back in the day, CompUSA was where you would go to buy computer components a lot of times. And one of the things that CompUSA offered was kind of an upgrade program. So you pay a little extra when you buy your product, and if it broke, you could bring it back and they would swap you for whatever was available. If it turns out that you bought your GeForce 2 Ultra, like what I did from CompUSA, and you take it back saying it's broken, they will give you the next iteration. So in that case would be the GeForce 3. Well, I got duped into trading in my GeForce 2 Ultra, which was a perfect card, super fast, worked great with my dual monitor setup and everything, to get the GeForce 3. Well, I get the card home, plug it into the machine. Now my dual monitor doesn't work. And it turns out the card was slower than my GeForce 2 Ultra. But since I didn't have the Ultra, I couldn't benchmark them back to back. Well, I got on eBay, I found this particular card, and the plan is to basically kind of prove what I knew in my gut, that the card I had was much, much better. It tended to cost more back then, but yeah, just kind of compared the two back to back.
So this is the new card then?
Yeah, this card is the GeForce 3.
Oh, so much unbagging on the old podcast.
Yeah, we need to show more pictures, I guess. The cool thing about the GeForce 3 card is that it came with a much larger cooler on the GPU. Yeah. And much larger heat sinks on the memory.
Also pretty blue, though.
Well, it's a much prettier blue. It's kind of like a darker blue, whereas the Ultra was kind of this lighter blue. Kind of cool. But it turns out that this particular card was not as fast. And that was well documented, even on the Wikipedia pages and some of the other review sites that looked at these cards. They claimed that in terms of the clocks, GeForce 2 Ultra was faster. And when the GeForce 3 got released, we've mentioned this several times, the hardware is usually ahead of software.
Yeah.
You need to have the hardware there to be able to test what new features were available. Well, the DirectX 8 benchmarks that the GeForce 3 supported had not really been available. So you couldn't test the two cards back to back until shortly thereafter. So any games that were going to support the new features weren't actually released for another 6 months. So I got stuck with this GeForce 3 playing old games slower than I was with my previous card because, you know, technology hadn't quite caught up.
Timing is everything. Well, I know that's not the only thing on your bench. You got one more, wow, really kind of fascinating thing.
Fascinating here. Thing. So this thing, I'll have to post a picture in the show notes. So be sure to come out to hardwareasylum.com and check it out. But this here is it's a floppy drive. And before you say, oh, what's a floppy drive? What the frick?
Yeah, I feel like I'm aging myself here, but I think I might have been 8 when I last saw one of these.
And
wow.
Honestly, I don't remember seeing one of these, although maybe it was in the TRS-80 when you roll through Radio Shack as a kid or something like that. But this is an 8-inch floppy drive. And this particular one is a Hitachi brand, and I believe it is unused. I got it off of eBay, and it was still wrapped in plastic.
And it still has the parking card in it.
Yeah, the little card to keep the heads from moving around when it's parked or transported or something like that.
I'm not even going to pick this up on the podcast because I'm afraid I'll hurt myself. It looks heavy.
It's not bad, actually. This is kind of in the full height configuration, but they consider this to be a half height drive.
Interesting.
It's one of the newer additions. If we spin it around.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. It's got some unusual plugs.
Yeah. So on the back, we have a 6-pin power plug and a 3-pin power plug. And then down here is a 50-pin floppy connector.
Oh, wow. That is old then.
So... Well, in terms of old, no PC, personal computer, ever came with an 8-inch drive. And by PC, I mean anything running MS-DOS.
Okay.
So you won't be able to find an MS-DOS distribution that supports the 8-inch floppy drive, even though you can get certain applications to do that. This was CPM era, so mid-80s or whatever.
Wow.
And this particular drive was likely an extra for an office environment where you had these floppy drives and you needed to have a spare in case it broke. So obviously this was just kind of sitting in the back storage area and just never got used.
Well, what a beast. Well, what do you plan on doing with it?
Actually, I kind of want to make it work. I think that would really be my ultimate goal. And I have an adapter which will take the 50-pin connector here and then adapt it to the 34-pin for the standard floppy inside the PC. Within the PC BIOS, supposedly I can just set it to a 1.5, which is the 5 1/4-inch floppy, and the two mechanisms are identical enough that will work to allow me to access the drive. And then I just need to run a special format command to go and format the disk, and then I should be able to use it just like any other 5 1/4-inch floppy on the 8-inch platform.
But can you still get 8-inch media?
Surprisingly, you can. Well, for this project, I went on to eBay, which is where I got this drive.
Right. It turns out
I was able to buy a pack of 3M 8-inch discs that were still shrink-wrapped. And it was like something like $50 or something like that.
But, wow.
But I figured, hey, I need at least one drive, or I need at least one disc so that I can, you know, test it out. And I figured maybe what I'll do is kind of what I did with NetHack on the YouTube channel, where I did some real retro gaming. Well, maybe I'll just play NetHack on my 8-inch floppy and do the exact same thing again. I think it'd be kind of a fun little experiment.
Well, it's definitely cool looking stuff, especially that. Wow. So folks, check out the YouTube channel and stay posted on the excitement with the retro gaming PCs. And I'm particularly excited to see if we can get this stuff working. So check it out.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS and follow us on Twitter. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2022. Thanks for listening.